Get ready for Ready Radio with Doug and Aaron. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by TruPrep. For all your prepping needs, visit TruPrep online at truprep.com or visit a TruPrep store in Roswell or Marietta. Listen in as Doug and Aaron provide helpful tips on how to get ready. Ready or not, here comes Ready Radio.
Welcome, everybody. You're listening to Ready Radio this morning here on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town. And we're having a fun Saturday morning. Aaron and I, we're here getting ready for our day, and we're hoping that you guys are enjoying the start of your day. Maybe you're making breakfast or getting ready and interested in listening to, you know, some news topics and things that are integral to preparedness. And this week, you know, we've been talking all week. You know, it's been one of those kind of dreary weeks. It's been getting a little chillier outside, and we've had some temperatures that have been dipping down near freezing.
Especially I'm glad for that.
And, you know, it's starting to feel a little more like Christmas out there.
It gives me a reason to use the fireplace.
Exactly. And so, you know, we've been kind of struggling with what topic, because we've talked about Christmas. We've talked about the ultimate gift-giving guide over there at TruPrep, our keynote sponsors, and all the good things that they're doing to help people get prepared. We've talked about Thanksgiving. We've even did another episode about water filtration not too long ago. And so, you know, we've been kind of bouncing back and forth on something that would be poignant and interesting on this Saturday morning.
You know, the only thing I can come up with is Ferguson.
Well, that's really, you know, that's been done to death in some ways. But, you know, there's a lot of angst out there right now, not just Ferguson, but in a lot of different communities and a lot of different venues. I mean, New York had that gentleman who was choked to death by the police. And
the Ferguson riots kind of came here. And we saw some, Wells Fargo Bank in downtown. Yep. That got their windows busted in. And the downtown connector was shut down completely. This was a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, for a few minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, it was.
And the police had to come and use tear gas or whatever to disperse it. I'm not sure exactly what they did.
They were about 1/15th as effective as normal traffic in the afternoon.
No kidding.
But, you know, it is an interesting topic because there has been, you know, a lot of news about it and what's going on. There's, you know, race relations in this country seem to be deteriorating even in the, you know, post-race era of the Obama presidency. We see a lot of people getting ready to go
march. Did you just say post-race era?
Yeah, that's what the New York Times called it after he was elected in 2008.
Really? I think they're a little delusional.
Reached an era of post-race issues. Because
if you're not a Democrat, you're a racist, according to the Democrats.
Well, in the end, you know, we see a lot of different people who are trying to bandwagon on this angst that's out there. There's going to be a march in Washington. You see, you know, Reverend Sharpton out there banging the drum, trying to get everybody together and to have change. And, you know, it's all over CNN and
you know,
Fox News.
I'm going to address Al Sharpton for a minute. Can I?
Directly?
No, just Reverend. You use the word Reverend, and I believe he's a Reverend about like Jeffrey Dahmer was a chef.
He's not really preaching the good word out there?
No, I mean, this whole, you know, Reverend thing, he should be teaching love thy neighbor and turn the other cheek and the good Christian values that would help us get over our race issues.
Like Jeremiah Wright did?
I'm not really sure who Jeremiah Wright is.
Oh, he was the pastor of a large congregation in Chicago that was attended by a certain first family for a while. And his thing was that God should not take care of America because we're so horrible. And he used language that I wouldn't use on the radio to describe how we should, what should happen to America.
Well, I mean, it's like Westboro Baptist Church. Okay. Those people were awful.
Mm-hmm.
And their leader. They're not as bad now. Apparently, their leader passed away last year.
Uh-huh.
And they're not quite as pickety as they used to be. Did you hear the Thanksgiving prank?
No, tell me about this.
Oh, man, I laughed. Apparently, there was like this mass email, and it floated all over Facebook about turkeys being recalled.
Mm-hmm.
And the 800 number was actually the number for Westboro Baptist Church.
Oh, my goodness.
So they got all these angry people wanting to know what to do about their turkeys and calling them a custom out.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty priceless.
Well, you know, there's a lot of different influences right now. People who are trying to get national attention. They're trying to change the way things are working. And this really does tie in to our main mission about being, you know, a more aware person, being more politically active, being more aware of what's going on in your culture and your society, and being prepared for things that are coming. Because as we look ahead, people are going to be getting more and more involved, and there's going to be more and more strife and distress when things like this happen. And I think that that's something that we need to pay attention to.
And we've got something that happens that causes a little bit of social unrest. It makes us kind of introspective and look at ourselves and go, okay, am I ready for this? Mm-hmm. Am I ready for even a crisis this small? What have I taken the steps to prepare to not have to go downtown ITP?
Yep. And for all of our listeners across the Fruited Plains who don't know what ITP means, it's inside the perimeter. It's an Atlanta slang thing to describe what most other cities call a beltway. So just for all the people out there in Utah who email us, and California and New York City, ITP is inside the perimeter of the city and OTP is outside the perimeter.
ITP is inside the 285 beltway.
Yep. Although if you call it a beltway here, everyone looks at you funny because they don't know what you're talking about.
They have no idea, but that's what it is, and it circles the city, 285,
yep,
all the way around. And so they call it the perimeter here, and inside the perimeter is the downtown area. But mostly it's just the mass of the downtown area.
Yep, you've got a little bit of Decatur, you've got the city of Atlanta proper, you've got a few other little cities, but there it's where the population density spikes and you get the skyscrapers in Midtown and Uptown and Downtown and the airport.
Right. So during the Ferguson rallies, after the grand jury decided that they were not going to indict the Ferguson officer, then all of a sudden we see all these people rioting, and they're not just rioting in Ferguson anymore. There's New Orleans riots. There's Atlanta riots. And I go, holy moly, they're rioting in downtown. Look at this. So they've got the connector shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I don't want to go downtown. I hope the radio station's okay.
Yeah, for sure. No, yeah, but you know there was widespread, and then there was the fallout from the New York City one.
Yeah, the New York City one, and you know I was not keeping up with this case. It just kind of fell into my lap all of a sudden. They're like, New York City grand jury decided not to indict an officer who choked a man to death.
A
cigarette?
A lot of not indicting going on lately. And I mean, that's kind of an interesting phenomenon for me. I think that it's rather unusual to see this many non-indictments coming out of grand juries.
It's, well, I mean, especially with the facts surrounding that case, if we look at it and we go, okay, the man was unarmed, mm-hmm, and he was middle-aged and he was overweight. And he really probably couldn't have put up too much of a struggle. And the cop choked him out,
mm-hmm,
and literally choked him out.
Until he died.
And he says, I can't breathe. And he keep choking him.
Well, he obviously could breathe if he could say, I can't breathe.
Well, on that last little bit of oxygen you have, you can squeak out a few words of none it. But, you know, sorry, you know, past history.
But
I know that you can.
Yeah,
on an asthma attack, and you're having an asthma attack, and there's not a lot of air there, but you can squeak out, I can't breathe.
So here's this poor guy in New York who was evading taxes and paid for it with his life.
Evading taxes is a little harsh. He was selling single cigarettes. That's what he was really doing. Evading taxes. He was buying cigarettes probably from another state or stealing them. We're not really sure which. He had been warned a few times in the past. What would normally be done in New York with a person who was doing this is he would be cited or written a ticket and asked to appear in court,
mm-hmm,
ordered to appear in court. He did not receive a ticket. He received a one-way ticket to the funeral home, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it's kind of, have you ever seen the comic book Judge Dredd?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Judge, jury, and executioner all in one.
Yeah.
Executing sentence on the street.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what comes to my mind when you hear stories like this.
It's just an illustration of the fact that we really do live in a police state.
Mm-hmm.
And the police are judge and jury for us. And a lot of the times people do not get their due process. And I believe wholeheartedly that this gentleman in New York was probably denied his due process.
Yeah, well, I think that's pretty clear.
That people have every right to be angry over that.
The question is where does a grand jury come in this, you know, debate? Because we've got...
Well, my question is, why are they saying, oh, we're not going to indict? What are they thinking? I mean, these are... I'm assuming a grand jury is picked just like a normal jury, right?
Not really, no.
Depends. You're the one that has all this knowledge, so share it with us here.
It depends on the state. I mean, I only have working knowledge of Georgia and Alaska. I don't know about anywhere else and how they do their system. But here and in Alaska, the grand jury was picked randomly. You would get a summons. It would come in your mail, and you just say, hey, you're coming to grand jury duty rather than petit jury duty. And that's the difference. If you're in front of a judge with a trial court, it's called a petit jury, and then the grand jury is a separate entity. We're kind of coming up on a commercial break. So maybe when we come back, I'll discuss what the difference is between two types of juries, how a grand jury is selected, what the grand jury's role is, so we can have a little bit more full discussion.
So we're going to get the lowdown on juries from Doug King,
attorney
at law.
Okay, folks, so you're listening to Ready Radio right here on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town. When we come back, we're going to discuss Ferguson, grand juries, and how to be better prepared. You're listening right now, Saturday morning, News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now back to Ready Radio with Doug and Aaron.
Welcome back, everybody. When we took our break, we were just starting to try to talk a little bit about the civil unrest and the disturbances that came out of New York City. And Aaron was asking me about grand juries. And she said, well, you know, aren't they picked the same way as a normal jury? And grand juries are a completely different creature. Grand juries are an investigative body. That's what their main purpose is to do, is they're supposed to go out and investigate things. So I know that, you know, from here in Georgia, I would see a lot of grand juries who would be tasked by the district attorney to look into certain problems. So there, you know, like there'd be some ethics complaints by the Board of Commissioners, or there would be some accusation of waste by the police department, or there'd be an accusation of fraud coming out of some other governmental entity, and the grand jury would be tasked to go and investigate this. And the way that they do that is the grand jury has subpoena power, and they can bring people, anybody. I mean, a grand jury has, like, plenary subpoena power to drag anybody they want in front of them to testify behind closed doors and under oath about what's going on. And so that's one of their roles. And so they're different than a jury that would be picked by lawyers. When you go in for jury duty and there's a certain case, you're going to hear that, you know, this case is about this or that, and we're looking for the best jurors for this type of case, and this lawyer's going to ask you some questions, and then that lawyer will ask you some questions, and the judge is going to ask you some questions, and then the lawyer's going to throw a couple of people out, and the other lawyer will throw a couple of people out, and the remainder will be the jury to make the decision. Grand jury doesn't work like that. It's just random people, and it depends on the state how many you get. It's going to be anywhere from 12 to 24. And they all come in, sit down, and then they just listen to what's going on, and then they can offer suggestions. They can put out a report and suggest that this happened or that happened. And they can also return indictments, which are the charging document that accuses somebody of a crime. So when you're first accused of a crime, what's going to happen is a police officer is going to make an arrest based on probable cause. Okay, so the police officer independently has determined that there is sufficient reason to arrest you, that you have committed a crime, and that he believes that you are the actual perpetrator of that crime.
And we're talking about real crimes, like felonies, crimes. You're not talking...
I'm talking about... In Georgia, it can be pretty much anything. I mean, you can be arrested for traffic violations. Now, they're allowed to cite you. They can choose to cite you, but they can go ahead and do a full-blown arrest for traffic citations here on certain crimes, because they're still misdemeanors, and we just bifurcate our system. Misdemeanor, felony, that's about it. So no matter what you're doing, you're committing some crime that's arrestable. So there's a crime here. Something's been committed, right? Now, if it's going to be a grand jury issue, it's going to have to be something fairly serious, because most states have allowed for accusations to supplant the grand jury's function. This allows the district attorney or in Georgia, it'd be a solicitor for misdemeanors, to issue a charging document on their own say-so. And what happens is first you're arrested under probable cause by a police officer. Then in your case goes to a prosecutor. And the prosecutor independently evaluates whether or not this case has merit to go forward. A prosecutor can dismiss a case at that point on their own, get rid of it, be completely done with it, wash their hands of it if their boss will let them. And this ends the process. But the prosecutor independently evaluates it and says, yes, looking at the police report, looking at the information I have on hand, I believe that a crime was committed. I believe this person is likely the person who committed the crime. So I want to go forward with the case. Now, if it's a minor crime, they can file an accusation. They just say, yep, I think that this case should go forward, and it's going in front of a judge somewhere. Or if it's a major crime, you have to get an indictment. And the only people that can issue an indictment is a grand jury. So the prosecutor, you've got a cop who made a determination of probable cause. Now you have a prosecutor who's a career prosecutor handling felony cases who's made a determination of probable cause. Now you go to a grand jury, and their job...
Hold on now. I've got a question.
Okay.
So here's this man, and he's selling cigarettes on the side of the street, okay, in New York City. And they're loose cigarettes, so he's selling single cigarettes. And this is a tax evasion issue, apparently, up there. I mean, if you've ever seen the price of cigarettes, most of it is tax up there. Cigarettes are like $14, $15 a pack up there. So, I mean, 50 cents a cigarette at 20 cigarettes a pack. He's making a little bit of money for himself. Okay. And so a cop comes up and says, dude, what are you doing? He's like, I'm selling Lucy cigarettes. And he's like, no, I'm going to choke you to death, okay? And then this is very not exactly how it would have worked out, but we're just going through the story here. Another cop had to decide that he had to be charged, right?
Yes.
So he got arrested. And so one of his cop buddies says, you know, dude, I'm sorry to say it, but the way you strangled dude back there was a crime. And I have probable cause now to arrest you.
Yep.
So you're under arrest and you have the right to remain silent and blah, 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 blah. Anything you say can be used against you.
Right. Now, the problem is...
We're going to arrest you and we're going to book you.
The problem is that's not what happened in that case.
Okay, so what happened?
They didn't arrest him at all. What they did is they did an investigation. They circumvented the arrest. They didn't make a determination of probable cause. They did an investigation. They referred the investigative notes to the DA. The DA then reviewed them and then made a decision to go take that information to the grand jury to charge them.
Okay, so he was never arrested.
He was never arrested. The only person who was arrested in that case was the guy who videotaped the gentleman being choked to death.
Why was he arrested?
I don't really remember the exact charge. I have been trying to find that out, but I've seen that he was the only person who was arrested in the entire fiasco. And that's something that can be done. I mean, if you, there are certain crimes.
Like, we don't want you videotaping our officers strangling people to death. You're under arrest for.
There are certain crimes that don't present a continuing danger to the community. And those are crimes that can be, instead of an arrest made, can be taken to the grand jury first. Some states, like Alaska, place a very draconian limit on how long you have to go between arrest and indictment. In Georgia, the time period between an arrest and indictment can be up to 2 years. In Alaska, it's only 10 days. And trying to get a complete case pulled together for presentment to a grand jury within 10 days is virtually impossible. I mean, it's just, it's the most ludicrous thing for a prosecutor to try to get his case pulled together in that short amount of time frame. So there are some times when it's advantageous not to have someone arrested, but to start the case with the grand jury. And that's what we saw in New York City, is that they were circumventing the determination of the officer. But even though there wasn't an arrest made there, there still was an officer who said, hey, this looks like it needs to go to the DA's office because it looks like there's probable cause here. They may not have arrested him, but they still made a referral. They referred the case's investigation notes to the DA. The DA then looked at it and said, yeah, there's enough probable cause here to want to go forward. And then you go to the grand jury and you present your evidence behind closed doors. Some states, like Georgia, it's completely sealed. There's no record. There's no transcript. There's no nothing. Who knows what was said? Who knows what was done? But in the end, an indictment pops out. Or in some cases, like Alaska, it's completely open. It's sealed at the time that it happens, but there's a transcription going on, and that's given to the defense attorney. And everything that's said in the grand jury room can be attacked later to see if it met the standards of evidence and probable cause and what needed to be done. So there's two ways of dealing with it, but that's what the grand jury's function is to listen to the evidence and return an indictment. So when we start to talk about why did a grand jury fail, this is really obligation of a prosecutor. Okay, there is no defense attorney in the grand jury room. The defendant never testifies, although the defendant did testify in the Ferguson case, which is really interesting. Why would he do that? Why would he go in there and subject himself to their questions that could potentially be used to harm him later on when he's defending himself? That doesn't make a lot of sense. No defendant would go willingly into a grand jury if he's represented by counsel unless there was something else going on, and that troubles me. So you've got people going in to give evidence and the grand jury returning an indictment. Well, who gives the evidence? It's always the DA. The DA is completely, and you know, it could be an assistant district attorney.
Well, it's because there's no defense attorney.
There is no defense attorney. There's no judge. There's nobody but the DA. So it's the DA's entire circus. They get to say whatever they want to say. They get to put up whatever evidence they want to put up. They don't have to put up evidence they don't want to put up. And there's some ethical issues. I mean, you know, you're not supposed to hide evidence from the grand jury. You're supposed to be transparent. But you are presenting a case, and you're putting forward the evidence in the best light for you, and no one's challenging you. So in this kind of a situation where you have one trained advocate whose job is nothing but doing prosecution, going in and trying to convince a majority, and it's not even, it doesn't have to be unanimous decision, but a majority of the grand jurors that they should return an indictment, obviously just about every single one is going to be returned positively in favor of what the DA wants. And that's what we're seeing right now in Ferguson and in New York, is that these indictments are being returned in the manner that the DA wishes for them to be returned. And that's the way it works with just about every indictment in every county and every state and every borough of this country.
No, you believe that the DA did not want charges filed against his officer.
No, I don't believe that for a second. I think that the DA's job in going in there was to punt and give blame to somebody else, because DAs are elected in most states. And they were trying to keep from having to share the blame on this. If they said, look, we're not going to seek charges against this officer, there would have been rioting, and everyone would be like, well, the DA
So they go, well, the grand jury decided that...
Yeah, it's not me. I didn't do squat. I took it to the grand jury. We presented it to them, and this wonderful grand jury with all of the information that you'll never hear, and you'll have no idea what all was said. These grand jurors are the only people in the entire world who could render a just decision in this case, came down with a just decision. Now, I had nothing to do with
it. In Ferguson, they've released all the information except for the people's names that said what they said.
Right. I mean, that's their option, and that's a good thing. I don't see that happening in New York, though.
I don't either. And, you know, I, while we've been sitting here talking, are we coming up on a commercial break?
We are. We've got about another minute.
Okay. While we were sitting here talking, I looked up why the cameraman was arrested, and we'll bring that up when we come back.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing, and I would like to know why the cameraman was the only person arrested in New York
City. He was not arrested for having the camera.
Okay. Well, we'll be back in just a minute, folks. You're listening to Ready Radio right here on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now back to Ready Radio with Doug and Aaron.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Ready Radio, and we're talking a little bit about all of the goings-on in the grand jury system in the U.S., apparently. I know, Aaron, we had our fabulous intern bring us a news story about why the...
No, I pulled this one up myself.
Okay.
Yeah, I pulled this one up myself. Our intern didn't do that, although our intern does miraculous things. Thank you, little intern.
So, what is this story?
I found rawstory.com, and I'm not 100% sure if this is a credible news source or whatever, but I want to believe. You know, it's kind of like Santa, I want to believe.
Or Fox Mulder.
Right. So, basically what it says here, and I'm not sure exactly what happened that day, but the story says, while a Staten Island grand jury decided on Wednesday not to indict the New York City police officer involved in the death of Eric Garner, prosecutors were able to secure an indictment against the man who filmed the fatal encounter. Well, how would they do that? Because it seems like filming somebody is completely legal, right?
Right.
As the Staten Island Advance reported, 22-year-old Ramsey Orta, that's the person who recorded the choking, was indicted this past August, 13 days after being arrested and charged with felony counts of third-degree criminal weapon possession and criminal firearm possession.
Yeah, you can't have a gun in New York City, that's for sure. That's because it's so safe.
Oh, yeah, it's so safe you don't want to walk down the street in New York City. That's not the point. Authorities argued that Orta stuffed an unloaded gun inside 17-year-old Alba Lekaj's waistband outside a hotel. But Orta has said that the charges against him were trumped up as retaliation for filming Garner being grabbed from behind by Officer Daniel Pantanello.
So let's get this straight. He didn't even have a gun on him. The allegation is that he gave a gun to someone else.
But then let's go on further down because it explains, okay? The city's medical examiner determined that Garner's death was homicide by chokehold. Mm-hmm. When they searched me, they didn't find nothing on me, Orta said to the Advance regarding his arrest. So he had no firearm on him when they searched him. And the same cop that searched me, he told me clearly himself that karma's a B-word.
Wow.
What goes around comes around. Orta said, adding later, I had nothing to do with this. I would be stupid to walk around with a gun after being in the spotlight.
Wow.
So basically, he knew that what he had recorded and turned over was big.
And they were going to make sure that he paid for it.
Yeah, and he is. He's been indicted with felony charges.
I mean, this is scary stuff, folks. And the grand jury system is supposed to be, you know, a bulwark or a stopgap where, you know, the individual citizen gets in there and is able to evaluate what's going on and challenge, you know, the cases that are being brought and even challenge the laws. And that's something that's, you know, not frequently talked about. But jury nullification, the grand jury's business is to look into the laws and make a determination on whether these are fair and equitable, but whether they're fair on their face, whether they're being fairly applied. If a grand jury had a case or there was a law that said you couldn't carry a gun at a public gathering, for instance, and you looked at all of the cases that were being brought, and they were always being brought against African-American defendants and never against white defendants, you might look at that as a grand jury and say, wait a minute, this, you know, while it may be a neutral law on its face, it's not being applied neutrally, and that's not fair, and we're not going to return indictments on this.
Right.
But the problem is that the grand juries are so controlled by the district attorney's office that they're not being independent, they're not able to make independent determinations, they're not investigating on their own, and they're just taking whatever is being fed to them.
And unfortunately, what's being fed to them would appear to be enough propaganda to get the rulings they wanted. Now, why would a district attorney not want a verdict?
Well, an
arraignment?
The problem is, well, there's a lot of reasons. Sometimes you're forced to take a case as a district attorney for political reasons. Your boss's boss says, hey, this is an important case. Go after it. And you're kind of stuck with it. It may have bad facts. You may not have a good feeling about it. It may have bad evidence, or it may be connected to police officers that you don't really trust. And yet you're being forced to take it forward. This is a great way to ditch a case without getting in trouble for it, because you can get the grand jury to get rid of it and you didn't have any problems. Another reason that you might not want a case to go forward is because it has, you know, a lot of political value, but very little evidentiary value. You know, again, people are hot and bothered about it. You know, you're talking about high profile cases, things you see on CNN. Everybody wants to see something happen, but you don't have the evidence. Another reason is because you're trying to protect somebody else who's involved in this. And that's the biggest issue here. And this is why there's been all these calls from major media outlets to have independent prosecutors handle cases that involve police officers. Because when you're a DA...
These are the
ADA,
same officers that bring you your cases. Right. And so you work with them daily.
Yeah. Well, with might be a bit of a stretch. I would go that... You kind of work around each other daily. The police have a different mindset, okay? You know, they identify a crime, they identify a perpetrator, they bring it to a close. This takes them, you know, if it's a big case, it might take them several days or even a week's worth of effort to bring this to fruition, right?
Right.
In simpler cases, it might take as little as 15 minutes to an hour to identify a suspect and to make a probable cause arrest. So police are constantly churning out arrests over and over and over. Well, let's put this in perspective. Let's say that you've got a small district attorney's office. Let's say there's only two people in it, right?
Right.
Now, you've got a 40-week trial calendar for the next year. That means you can try about 40 cases in that year. You have police officers who are churning out 1,000 cases a year. There's a disjunction there. If everybody wants a trial, it ain't going to work.
Well, no, it's like trying to squeeze an elephant through the eye of a needle.
Right. And it just won't work. But the police, their goal is to identify crimes and to arrest a suspect for it. And as long as there are crimes being committed, they're going to keep churning out more and more cases.
Well, see, this is the reason there's so many plea deals, is because they can't possibly try every case. So they take the ones that are less fruitful and offer them plea deals.
Well, that's the theory, is that you would take a bad case and offer it a good plea deal. But if you... Let's put you take you out of the role of the DA and put you in the role of the defendant, Aaron. Let's say that you're looking at the evidence against you and you realize that the police have a weak case. What are you going to ask for?
I want a jury trial.
Exactly, because you think you're going to walk. So the worst cases end up going to trial and the best cases end up getting pled out.
Especially if you know that you didn't do anything wrong.
Yes, and those all sides would agree that those have to be tried. But here, you know, you've got somebody who... believes that they can walk. The DA believes that they could probably walk from a trial. So instead of making a hard offer on them, they're going to make the most generous offer in the world. And when that doesn't work, they're going to end up trying the case if they can't dismiss it. And the reason they can't dismiss it is either political or because of pressure from the police department. So you end up trying bad cases over and over and over again. Now, on the flip side, what happens if there's a really good case? Let's say that I've got you dead to rights. I've got you, the defendant has walked into a gas station, picked up a can of soda, got his fingerprints all over the can of soda. He's on video. He walks up to the clerk, sets the soda down on the cash register counter, waits for everyone to leave, pulls a gun out on the clerk, steals the money, goes home. The clerk's got his picture identification. You know, the clerk saw him. You've got the video. You've got his fingerprints. You go to his apartment from the fingerprints with a search warrant. You find the clothes that the guy was wearing in the apartment, and you find the money from the cash register, the exact amount of money that was taken out of the cash register. Let's say that those are the facts of the case, okay? What happens to that case? Do you think that they go to trial?
Oh, no.
They get a plea offer.
Yeah, and he takes it because right. He knows he did it.
Right. It's pretty simple. Now, if you offer them the same amount in the plea offer as they would, the maximum they would get if they lost at trial, what's the incentive to take the plea offer?
There's not.
So then you go to trial.
Right.
So the plea offer on a bad case has to be better than what you would get at trial. Right?
Right.
So the bad cases, from the district attorney's perspective, the bad cases go to trial, and the good cases get easier offers and walk.
So they're like, this is the deal. We've got you dead to rights on DUI, but we're going to make this easy on you, and we're going to give you state minimums, even though we have video of you staggering all over the
I've only got 40 slots to try cases. Which ones are we going to do? And then then the police come to the DA and say, all right, well, you know, we turned over 50 good cases last week. We would like the maximum sentence on each. And as the DA, you go, well, I can't. There's no way. Even if those were the only 50 cases you brought me all year, I'm still 10 short. I can't try them all. And if you offer them the maximum, they're going to want a trial. And I can't try every case. So there's got to be a breakdown where people get a deal to make the system work.
Which is plea bargains.
And so when you're talking about what cases do you take to the grand jury and what cases, sometimes you got to just ditch cases left and right to be able to keep the boat afloat. And that's the downside of the way the criminal justice system works, is that there's way more crimes than there are courtrooms.
When I was in college and I was taking criminal justice classes, criminology classes, I remember my intro to criminal justice class and the pyramid of breakdown of, you know, you have your charges and then you have what actually makes it to plea bargaining. And then and what actually made it to court was a little teeny tiny top.
Yeah, less than 1%.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been in a busy trial practice. When I was a DA, I was trying cases every week. Every week I had a trial, trying to keep ahead of the surge. When I was in criminal defense, you know, as a public defender, I was trying cases every other week because I had a trial partner. So at least I got a week off to catch my breath. But it is an absolute flat-out race all the time in criminal justice between prosecutors and defense attorneys trying to stay ahead of this surge. And that's where, you know, having a good private defense attorney can make a real difference. Folks, we're coming up on a commercial break, so stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to have the True Prep product of the week. We'll finish up our discussion on criminal justice system and rioting and how to be better prepared. And you're listening to Ready Radio right here on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now back to Ready Radio with Doug and Aaron.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Ready Radio this Saturday morning, and we've been talking about a lot of different topics, really. We've talked a little bit about criminal justice and trying to put some perspective and a little education on these grand jury decisions, which are causing rioting and demonstrations and more demonstrations to come. In Washington, D.C., there's going to be a march, and there's going to be a lot of attention brought on this. And I think that our you know, in tying back into these Jeffersonian principles of knowing, you know, how our government works and being involved, our listeners need to realize why the police and the prosecutors aren't actually really on the same side all the time. And as in my life as a prosecutor, I saw this more often than not, that the police were upset or angry about things that were going on, and they wanted more convictions, they wanted stiffer sentences, they wanted to see the people sent away, and they're dealing with a prison system where the more people you send into it, the less time they start serving because there just isn't the capacity for it. You can't build your way out of it. These people generally won't be reformed, and there's this giant mill, and it's very demoralizing for the police. It's very demoralizing for prosecutors. It's a hard row to hoe. And in the midst of all of this angst of people getting away with things and people getting out early and people getting light deals because you got to move the cases and there's only 40, you know, trial weeks in a year, and what are you going to do? You've got police officers who are wandering the streets seeing the same people go in and come out, and then there's a level of frustration. And we talk about, well, we need to, you know, NPR was all about this a couple of weeks ago, saying how, oh, we need to, you know, train officers to not be afraid of black men, because when officers are afraid of black men, then people die. Well, that's really not it. I think that the reason that people die at the hands of police officers is not because they're afraid of black men, although, you know, it makes a much better compelling story for self-defense when you say, I was afraid for my life, or I thought they were going to use deadly force on me. The truth is that there's just a high level of frustration as they see the same people commit the same crimes over and over, and there's nothing that they can do about it. We look at these officers who are out on the street dealing with this, and then sometimes, you know, human beings are human. Sometimes they snap. And I'm not condoning what they do. I'm not condoning that it happens. But I'm just saying that that's the reality. And sometimes officers do things which are beyond the pale. You look at the Rodney King beating. You look at the gentleman in New York. You look at some of these things. The Ferguson thing, I'm out to lunch on because I don't know. I mean, it could have been either way, and there's not enough evidence.
I'm going to play both sides of the field for a second here, and I'm going to say if he was, say, a dirty cop and he did something he shouldn't have done, he's paying for it. Well, he's lost his career, and he's not going to be employable by any other police department ever.
I'm not saying that they're necessarily a dirty cop that makes them snap. I'm just saying that when you are put in the pressure cooker, and that would be a good product of the week, pressure canners. When you're put in a pressure canner of this kind of day in, day out, dealing with people who are completely adverse to you and seeing no consequences for their actions, it builds up to a point where some people can't handle it. And we don't have a way to really to separate the wheat from the chaff. The officers who can handle that kind of strain and laugh it off and shake it off and go back and do the same job again the next day, and the ones who just hold on to it and it builds up and builds up and builds up until finally one day they're choking somebody to death.
Or they know that this person who's reached in and grabbed their gun and they accidentally shot their thumb off is not going to see a day of jail time for it, and they snap and shoot them.
It's possible. You know, we're not making any judgments on what happened in Ferguson or New York, for that matter. But I'm just saying that there's an angst that's building up on both sides, and that's what's scary. Okay, the police are being drawn into this brotherhood thing where it's us against them, and there's an angst there where they think that, you know, everybody's out to get them, and no, there is no justice, and there's nothing that can be done. On the other hand, you have, you know, these communities of colors
that are terrified of the police
and are angry about it and are willing to burn down their own community over it because there's nothing left. There's no reason to keep fighting like this when there's nothing left.
Well, you know, I just don't understand the want to burn down your own community over it. That's the part that where I fail to find where it connects, okay?
They know that they can't reach out any further than their own community, and with the way life is not worth living. There's no point. I mean, are you really going to get joy out of going to that Little Caesars or to that hair place? The problem is that there's no way to get the attention necessary, and so you reach out as far as you can, and they're stuck where they are. They have no mobility. They have no way to strike out at the police. They have no way to do anything more. And so they strike out where they're able to.
So they burn down their own church.
Yeah.
And they burn down their own school. And then they wonder why they don't have anything in their communities and why their communities are so bad and run down. And then they complain about it. And they go, well, we're going to burn it down. And if the white owner of this business does not rebuild it, then we're going to come after them.
Yeah, well, there are
there's just a disconnect everywhere.
There is, but there in a larger socioeconomic perspective, I can see why people loot and riot where they live, and I can see why cops are angry. And these two angry forces, I mean, it's like the immovable object and the irresistible force are coming together in America. And the way that we're going to have to overcome this is broad spectrum. We're going to have to do something because the way it's going, things are getting worse, not better.
And things didn't have to get worse. I mean, huh?
You're exactly right. Things did not have to get worse. We're just, I'm looking at our dwindling time and thinking about the product of the week. I know that, you know, our good sponsors over at True Prep, you know, they have a variety of things in their store that are make great gift ideas and things that are coming up. Also, we want to encourage everybody to reach out, not only to go to True Prep and shop there or visit their website at trueprep.com, T-R-U-P-R-E-P, but also swing by our website at readyradio.net, our Facebook page, our Twitter feed, readyradio.net, or you can email Aaron or I, doug@readyradio.net or aaron@readyradio.net as well. So,
and I am still looking for contestants for the
trivia show.
So please shoot me an email if you're interested in participating in Prepper Trivia.
There we go.
Aaron@readyradio.net.
So looking at the products available at True Prep, you know, one of their flagship lines, and this has absolutely nothing to do with what we've been talking about, but they carry an extensive variety of paracord, don't they, Aaron?
Yeah, paracord. Lots of it. Was 170 some colors?
At last count, I think that they were brushing up against 200. Yeah. So there's any color that you could ever want is available there. They've got different blends and
have
solid
you seen
colors.
The paracord crafts that people are doing?
Mm-hmm.
I need somebody to make me one of those monkey claws for monkeys.
Monkey fist. Yep.
It's got a heavy ball in it. And if somebody messes with you, like, you get stuck in a pool of riders, and they're coming after you, and they're kind of like.
But don't use it on the cops, or they'll shoot you.
Don't shoot.
Yeah, hands up, don't shoot. No monkey fist for us. Anyway, so there's a variety of products there that are fantastic. Swing by, mm-hmm. Check out their books on paracording, paracord needles, their paracord widgets that hold your paracord for you, along with all the stuff you need to be able to cut and paste it and get it going, and their wide variety of colors. And I didn't want to, like, cut you off mid-sentence there, and I know I kind of did, but we're getting real close to the end, and I wanted to make sure that we mentioned the product of the week and the different ways for people to reach out to us. Especially considering how, you know, we've been talking about this institutional angst and how people are rioting and you know, the more ways that we can connect and interconnect with each other and share ideas and be vocal, the more ways that we can, you know, kind of head this sort of stuff off. So, you know, I think that this is a good topic, and there's a lot of things going on in this country that we need to address.
There's a lot of things going on in this country that we need to address, yes. But there's also a lot of things going on in this country that get blown out of proportion. And I think a lot of people just freak out over nothing and go apey. And then we have to prepare to clean up the mess and the devastation afterwards.
And that's something that we all need to be ready for, because, you know, this isn't going to just disappear overnight. And no matter what we do, there's always going to be things that are unjust and shouldn't happen. And the way we deal with them is the important thing. Get involved. Know how your grand jury system works. If you're called for grand jury duty, don't just lay down. Stand up and ask the DA questions and be involved and be active and turn it into what it's supposed to be. Don't just lay down if you're called for jury duty, too. I mean, this is, you know, one of the great American institutions is being on a jury. And I'm biased because I'm a lawyer and I work in the system all the time. But the highest calling, the best thing I could ever do in my life would be on a jury. I would love to be able to sit there and evaluate the evidence and decide a case and be influential.
And see, I see that as a curse. to have to sit and decide someone else's fate. I just don't like the idea.
And all the more reason that you should do it then, because that's the kind of person that should be on a jury.
Really?
Really.
Because
why? They're going to be the most fair. They're going to be the most impartial. They're going to be the ones who are honestly seeking. A jury is supposed to be a group of 12 people honestly seeking the truth. And if you're honestly seeking the truth, then you're the perfect juror. And that's what it comes down to, is you got to be able to look at what's going on. Folks, this has been kind of a packed episode. There's lots going on here. If you want to reach out to me individually and ask any questions about the criminal justice system, feel free. We're out of time for this week. Next week, we'll have a topic that's more prepping and less looting. And I hope that all of you enjoy your Saturday. Enjoy your family. Enjoy your friends. Enjoy the
Christmas
season. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
You've been listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Aaron. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by TruPrep. For all your prepping needs, visit TruPrep online at truprep.com or visit a TruPrep store in Roswell or Marietta. Tune in each week as Doug and Aaron get you ready for anything that comes your way. Ready Radio, Saturday mornings at 8, only on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.